say either, and I say either. You say neither, and I say neither. Either, either, neither, neither. Let's call the whole thing off.
Words. If you say, let's go buy some bakery when you go out for donuts, you may be from Wisconsin for sure. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. We'll talk about more Wisconsin-influenced words with our guests today. They are co-hosts and co-producers of the public radio show about language. I enjoy it. It's called Away with Words. We're happy to have Martha Barnett. And Martha, you there?
I am here, Larry.
Thanks for joining us today. And Grant Barrett with us today by phone. Grant, are you there?
Hello.
Hi. Well, I'll tell you what, Martha and Grant talk with callers from around the world, really, about slang, about word origins, about regional dialects, and speaking and writing well. And you can hear Away with Words on the Ideas Network every Sunday at 9 a.m. Is there a word or expression that you use that's unusual? Are you curious about where it comes from? Are you curious about the show itself and how they do the show? I hope you'll join in. Number to call is 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org. And they're going to be with us in both Milwaukee and Madison. We'll talk about that as well. They'll be here in person. It's going to be fun in March 6th at Turner Hall in Milwaukee, March 7th at UW-Madison and Shannon Hall. So it's going to be a lot of fun talking with them, and then you'll get a chance to see them in person maybe. Martha, how'd you get so fascinated with words, or when did that start?
Oh, it started a long time ago. I grew up in Kentucky, and I was an English teacher's daughter, so a lot of the grammar I learned simply by osmosis or by my mother taught me the difference between lie and lay one day when I was lying on the couch all afternoon, but I told my mother I was laying on the couch, and she said, oh, goody, how many eggs? I don't have to go to the store. So I never made that mistake again, but I learned it that way, and then when I was in college, I was studying ancient Greek. I decided I would be really smart and take a Greek course so I could read Sappho and Plato and Homer in the original. And what I found out was that it was really hard, much, much harder than I ever imagined. And it turned out to be one of my favorite failures in my life, because instead of continuing with the course and failing it, I dropped it. But I found a tutor who spoke lots of different languages, and he started teaching me ancient Greek and various other languages in a whole different way. And it sort of opened up for me the wonder of individual words and the secrets that are locked inside of every single one of them. Every word carries a history with it. And that's one of the things that Grant and I love talking about on the show.
Yeah.
The histories of words and phrases.
Yeah, it's fun. Hearing about those words and phrases. Grant, how did you get involved with words?
I wanted to become a better writer. I was a cub reporter at the student newspaper at the University of Missouri. They have a great journalism program there, and that's what I thought that I wanted to do. And I realized I had some work to do. You know, the older students would copy edit my work and find some things like, well, how do I not know this? How did I not discover this before now? So I found a group called the American Dialect Society. I discovered them on the internet. This is actually kind of before the internet was really huge. And I joined their email list, and it's this group of people, these linguists and lexicographers and amateurs and professionals and word historians, all sharing their discoveries and their research and their ideas and stuff. And I learned basically at the feet of, it turns out later, some of the top linguists in the country. I didn't know at the time. They were just names on my computer screen. And so eventually I became more involved with the American Dialect Society, so much that I'm now an officer of the society and have been involved for 25-plus years. And along the way, I became a dictionary editor, specializing in slang and new words, and eventually got invited to join Away with Words. And here I am, and Martha and I have been doing this together since 2006.
Somebody might say, what the heck is a lexicographer?
They are people who compile and edit dictionaries.
there you have it. It's that simple. You know, over the years, I had a lot of fun working with the folks from the Dictionary of American Regional English, which, of course, was developed here at the UW-Madison. And,
yeah.
And you have some experience and a tie with it as well in some ways, do you not?
Oh, my goodness. The Dictionary of American Regional English is just golden in our minds. I used to keep the hard copies next to my bed and just use them as reading material before I went to sleep. Not that it put me to sleep. It was really exciting. So it's one of the great, great publications ever in the world. Grant and I consult it all the time.
Absolutely.
Pretty much every single day. All week, all day, and it's digitized online now, which makes it even faster to use. It's really exciting.
You know, I want to go back. Wisconsin Public Radio, I think it was one of the first stations to pick up Away with Words. Do you get a lot of calls from our state?
Oh, my.
Oh, heavens, yes.
I know that.
Yeah, well, we've been on the air in Wisconsin for, 17, 18 years?
Yeah.
I don't even really know. Quite before Martha and I joined the show, actually.
Right.
A year or so ago, I did an analysis of all our incoming calls and sorted them by area code and stuff. And Wisconsin was second after Texas, because Texas is bigger and they like to talk more. But Wisconsinites are a little more reticent, but they're right up there. And there's no end to the curiosity that comes out of Wisconsin when it has to do with language. There is a constant supply of new ideas and thoughts and questions and book recommendations and links that we need to read and funny stories. We learn from our listeners, and Wisconsin's right up there at the top.
Well, I can tell you right now. I can tell you right now that every one of our phone lines is filled.
Well, that's great. And, you know, that's one of the reasons that Grant and I are so excited. We cannot wait to get to Madison and Milwaukee, because can you believe it? We have not been there in all the time that Grant and I have been doing the show together, which is 13 or 14 years now. We have never been to Wisconsin. And so this is going to be our first visit. And we are so excited to meet our listeners and meet some of the people who've been teaching us about language and who have been sharing some wonderful stories.
Well, Carol in Belgium has a question for you, perhaps. Let's go there. Carol, hi.
Good morning. I grew up in the little town of Belgium in southeast Wisconsin, and we had Mexican workers, migrant workers, come in the summer, and the local year-round population got to call barbecue and Sloppy Joe's hot tamales. And I think it might have been because, you know, barbecue is hot in temperature and tamales must be tomatoes. But then when I moved away, people thought I was nuts to call barbecue or Sloppy Joe's hot tamales. But that's how we grew up calling it.
I love it. I was thinking that was a Sheboygan thing, hot tamales.
Sheboygan is not.
Do you remember having a conversation about that on the air? I'm thinking we had one about that.
I believe we did talk about this on the air, and it turns out it's one of those things where the name tamale was borrowed to describe a different kind of food because people weren't really familiar with it. It's the English speakers who did it, not the Spanish speakers. The English speakers weren't really familiar with the food, so they found the name useful to apply to something that wasn't very Mexican. That happened before, but yeah.
And Belgium isn't far from there. Sheboygan.
Okay, there you go.
It's close by. So there you go. Carol, thanks. Well, Carrie in Milwaukee, your turn.
Hi. Hello. Hey, I have a great aunt, Auntie Jo, who was probably born in about 1890 here in the Milwaukee area. And when she wanted to say shame on you, she would say sappy lodi. And I have never heard anybody else say that. And I'm wondering, is this anything anybody else has ever said?
What is it again?
Sappy lodi.
Sappy lodi?
Yes.
Can you spell that for us?
No.
What's the nationality? What nationality?
German.
German.
Yeah. Sort of like S-A-P-E-E, and then maybe, because she always sort of had a space in between L-O-D-E-E, maybe Sapi Lodi.
Sapi Lodi. Wow. Something Lord? Oh, that's a good one. I'm making a note here for this, and hopefully I'll have answers for you when we do our live shows in Wisconsin, all right?
Well, it might be something like, holy cow.
Right.
It was more like shame on you.
Oh, it was more like that.
More like, I can't believe you, that sort of thing?
I'm not sure, but it was, you knew it wasn't good if she was telling you stop. Yeah, she got her point across one way or another.
Mind your manners here. Oh, my goodness me. Well, we'll work on that one, Carrie. Faye and Oshkosh, what about you? What have you got for us?
Hi. So I remember saying to my children that when I was upset, I was mad as a wet hen, and couldn't tell you where I picked this up. I grew up in military housing all over the country. But do hens get wet, and do they get mad when they get wet?
They don't like to be wet.
Yes, all of the above. They don't like it. They do get wet. You know, if they're on a farm, there's always water spraying for this purpose, that person. Our rascally kids will chase them with the hose, that sort of thing. But, yeah, that's actually an old idiom, not particularly American. I think you'll find that throughout the English-speaking world. I couldn't say how far, but my gut tells me back to the 1600s.
Oh, thank you. Thanks so much for that call. Grant Barrett and Martha Barnett, who are co-hosts and producers of Away With Words. You hear it Sunday mornings at 9 on Wisconsin Public Radio. They're going to be with us right up until 12:30 today. We'll talk more about words. We'll talk about their speaking engagements coming up here in Wisconsin in early March. And you will have a chance to call in. In fact, you could do it right now. 1-800-642-1234. You like potatoes
and I like potatoes. You say either, I say either. You say neither, and I say neither. Either, either, or neither, neither. Let's call the whole thing off.
Talking about language today with the co-host of Public Radio's Away With Words, I'm Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network. With me are Grant Barrett and Martha Barnett. Grant is an American lexicographer and linguist. He's helped produce dozens of dictionaries. Martha is the author of reader-friendly books on word origins, background in ancient Greek and Latin, studied Spanish in Costa Rica, worked as a newspaper reporter for major metropolitan dailies. So they're here, and they're going to be in Wisconsin March 6th, they'll be at Turner Hall in Milwaukee, March 7th at UW-Madison in Shannon Hall, and it's going to be fun to see them in person, but for now we have them on by phone, and great to have them with us. What will you, what will be your little shtick on March 6th and March 7th, Martha?
Well, Grant and I, it's not an actual live show. But Grant, I mean, we will be there and we will be alive, but it's not as if we're recording an episode of the show. We talk a little bit at the top of the show, sometimes share a favorite phone call or something like that. And then I talk a little bit about etymology in particular. Grant is an expert on slang and dialect. And so we take turns talking. But the probably the most important part is the question and answer period at the end, or it's one of the most important parts, because that's when we get to hear from you. That's when we get to hear from listeners, and people can ask their questions. And often that goes as long as anything else. We have been asked before to turn out the lights when we're leaving the cleaning crew.
I can believe it.
People love talking about language, in particular, particularly in Wisconsin, people love to talk about the way they talk.
And Grant, you, I mentioned at the start of this segment, let's go buy some bakery. That sounds right here in Wisconsin, but maybe it sounds odd in other parts of the country?
Yeah, absolutely. It's used in Wisconsin in places that were largely German settlement areas, and it's still around. You'll find it on the front of grocery stores, it'll say fresh bakery instead of where the rest of the country would put fresh baked goods. So it seems ordinary to people in Wisconsin, but it seems odd to everyone else.
Amy in Appleton has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Amy.
Good afternoon. I am so pleased to speak with you. I love words. I love language. And I so appreciate the joy and the fun that the two of you bring to both of those things. It's just a highlight.
Right.
Pardon me, I'm losing my voice, which is odd for calling in, I know. But I have a great story from my mom's school years. She went to school in New Holstein, Wisconsin, back in the 20s and 30s. And she had a teacher who was a stickler for grammar and usage. Mm-hmm. And my entire life has been affected in the way I speak because of that teacher. But my favorite thing was when they would bring an assignment to her, if they said, I'm done, she'd say, baked or fried? So I always have had to think about that. And when I ask, you know, my grandchildren, for instance, you know, are you finished with that? I don't say, are you done with that? Because that has carried through.
Yeah, the lessons stick early on. We get a lot of callers saying things like, oh, I learned this in the third grade. And sometimes the information is still good, but sometimes it requires a little bit of updating. But, yeah, those very important to have those role models early in life, the one teacher who paid more attention than the other, the parent who paid more attention, the older sibling who just kind of sets you straight and puts you on a good path.
Thank you, Amy. Let's go to Andrea in Sparta, Wisconsin. Hi, Andrea.
Hi, I just want to say thank you for the tremendous respect you show to all of your listeners and the callers, and I just love your banter and how you compliment each other. So thank you. And the question I have is, how much of your work, your answers and how you form them, how much of it comes from what you already know, and how much are you like scrambling on all of those wonderful resources you have online and in front of you in books? So that is my question. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yes, it's a good question. We have been at this for a very, very long time. And as you'll see in the Q&A, if you come to, and we hope you do, come to our shows, there's a lot of it that we already know. But we do have databases at our fingertips, and so it's a combination of those.
Yeah, we do it like Car Talk did it, which wasn't quite, you know, live either. And it's important to get things right, like titles and authors and dates. And what we don't want to do is put out the incorrect information if we can help it.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. I hosted a national show myself once called Calling All Pets, and
I remember that one.
With Patricia
course,
McConnell,
yeah.
And we did
yeah,
it like Car Talk as well. So, although we would, when callers, we didn't, the producer knew what the questions were going to be, but we didn't. So but that would be a lot more difficult for in your situation for sure, in some instances, I would think.
Yeah, but the more complicating factor is that the show airs at something like 40 different times around the country, and so you can't do it 40 times a week, you know? So you figure out other strategies. And the other one is, if we did it only live, you know, only certain markets would really show up. Like, it'd be all Wisconsin callers or all Texas callers or all San Diego callers. So yeah. We make sure that we get a good sample from people across the country. We make sure their voices are heard and there's good representation and that people are showing up on the show that might not otherwise have a voice.
Yeah, and men and women, both. Allowing to make sure.
In all ages. We've talked to, you know, 6-year-olds on the show. We've talked to 96-year-olds on the show.
Grant emailed to ask if you could describe the most common word combinations or phrases that give away that you are from Wisconsin.
Oh, wow. Well, it's not in the lexus. It's not the terms that you use. It's the vowels that you use. And everyone knows, I think, at this point, that Wisconsin has a notable accent, and it's part of what's called the Northern Cities Vowel Shift, which large parts of the northern part of this country, kind of vaguely connected to the Great Lakes, are undergoing a shift in the way they pronounce some vowels. And there's a lot of linguistic jargon about it, but we can find those features dominate Wisconsin speech. And then when you add on the lexical items like things like fresh bakery or the word Finnish words or Germanic words or different kinds of other language, like from little on up, do you know this one, meaning from a young age, then yeah. We know that you're from Wisconsin. So any sociolinguist who's been at this a while probably could ask you maybe a dozen questions and nail you as being from Wisconsin pretty fast.
And the vowel, now describe on the vowel, how we use vowels differently.
Well, what's happening is some vowels are turning from, they're being backed. So the word like ma'am, instead of mom. So maybe you used to say in the 1940s, mom, M-O-M, but now you might say ma'am, a little like that. And it's hard to hear on the radio, but it's the kind of thing that linguists can record and do analysis of and develop the waveforms and start to track and see. And actually, we have evidence earlier than the 1940s that this was already underway. And it's centered in the language of women. Women are started this trend and still carry it forward today.
Mm. I think we talk through our nose more here in Wisconsin, too, maybe than other parts of the country, if you know what I mean.
You might just be hearing that backed vowel. The backed vowel refers to where in the mouth it's happening, what you're doing with your tongue, your jaw, the different physical parts of the face that form these different vowels, because they're subtly different. And when one vowel changes, the other vowels change. So when vowels start to collide and sound alike, then your natural response, without even thinking about it, is to make the other vowels kind of push away so that they're more distinct. And so a single vowel changing can change the whole vowel set for a person. And then if you've got connections to other people and influence and there's a chain of respect, then you're going to see that change spread to other people nearby. And after a while, it becomes a regional feature. Uh-huh.
Pat in East Troy has something for us. Hi, Pat.
Hi, Larry. Thank you for having these wonderful people on. I missed church on Sunday because I was iced in, and that allowed me to hear their program on radio. What I really was calling about was to share with you word that was probably invented by a teacher I had in seventh grade down in Illinois. She was very straight-laced, but she redeemed herself by teaching us her word, super gobsloptious. I wondered if you'd ever heard that before.
What is
super gobsloptious, and what does that mean?
I think probably means something kind of messy, but let's see, super. I think super would be the first choice of...
So really, messy. Super, what is it again? Say it once more.
Super gobsloptious.
Oh, sloptious. I thought you said sloptious, and I was thinking, boy, that sounds really great.
Oh, well, I have never heard that one before.
There are some examples of this. There, you will find, if you Google it, you can actually come up with a number of different mentions of it, including in H.L. Mencken's work, The American Language. Mencken was a journalist on the East Coast in Baltimore who was known for having an ear for language. And in this multi-volume work where he analyzed the language of America and wrote a bunch of essays, and he includes this. And you'll also find it as early as 1917 in a something called the Dialect Notes, which was an early production of the American Dialect Society, which is the group that I'm involved with.
Ah, interesting. Pat, thank you.
Lots of different spellings of it, though, like tons of them.
Thank you, Pat. Leisha in Spring Green, your turn.
Hi. In 1960, I was 10, and we lived in Ohio, and I went to Camp Tippecanoe. And there were two girls there from Pennsylvania, and after almost everything they said, they always said, yet and so. And I never heard anybody else ever say that.
So, yeah, I wonder what part of Pennsylvania they were from. Do you know?
Well, yeah, it was, right on the border, like close to Ohio.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh, so western Pennsylvania.
Yet and so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yet and so.
Yet and so. That sounds like something that would come from an area of German settlement. Grant, does that ring a bell for you?
Yeah, it sounds like a sentence tag. And actually, there is a particular use of yet and Minnesota, Wisconsin, and some nearby states. It's where it's not quite already, and it's not quite now. It's a different kind of yet. It's almost just something you tag on the end as a kind of confirmation that what you said is a true factual thing.
I haven't finished that assignment yet.
Well, it's more like she's a fantastic baker yet.
Oh, like okay. Gotcha.
Does that sound right? Does that sound like what the camp girls were doing?
Leisha?
Yeah, yeah.
Something like that?
I always wanted to ask you guys that.
It's a fantastic one, but Martha's right, I think. I think it is from the place of the Germanic settlement because it's a calque, which is a fancy language word, which means a word or phrase is borrowed directly from another language and translated directly. The classic example of a calque being the word skyscraper, which is almost literally skyscraper in just about every major European language. It's grazie in French and so forth. So, but anyway, it sounds like a calque, something borrowed into English, and the pattern kind of was kept from the original language.
There you go. Thank you, Leisha. Ralph, and as long as we're talking about Ralph and Hayward emailed to ask you to comment on the prevalent use of the word so and yeah. He asks if it's a new crutch like or is it based on something else? He doesn't like, he finds it kind of annoying.
I bet what he's talking about is what linguists call the sentence initial so, which sort of substitutes these days more and more for well. You know, if I ask you a question and you're responding to my question by giving me an answer that starts, so I went to the store. I went to the store to get bakery today. It's become more and more prevalent, and people are starting to notice it. But to me, it's simply a substitute for well. What sense does it make to say well at the beginning of a sentence, really?
Yeah.
Right. It's a continuation of a thought and an idea. And sometimes what you're continuing is the question that you were asked. So they're asking mm-hmm. a question. You start your answer with so or well, and you provide that bridge between the two parts of the conversation. So it does have a structural role. It's not simply a filler word. Now, the yeah that he mentioned could be something else. I don't know where in the sentence it was appearing, but it could be a lot of different things depending on how often it appears, where it appears, what it appears next to.
Dawn from Duluth called to say she heard you say, my wife, she is a, and Dawn was taught that was incorrect, like saying my wife. Is this acceptable to say, to use it, the term in that fashion? My wife, she is a wonderful person or whatever.
Yeah, it's we offset it with, if you wrote it out, it'd be my wife, comma, she is a whatever. This is just a restatement in fact to emphasize the subject of the sentence. So it's the kind of thing we do all the time. We have in spoken words, in spoken language, we have repetition for a variety of reasons, but a lot of it has to do with emphasis. Yeah, it's 100% legitimate. I don't know who has an injunction against that, but they're incorrect.
Okay.
Yeah, I had a sixth grade teacher who would advise against that. But again, it's one of those things that doesn't necessarily have any basis in fact.
Yeah, there are a lot of these zombie rules out there that are being still taught today and should not be taught, that they're linguistically incorrect, that they're historically incorrect, but they're a little better than superstition. This might be one of those.
Miranda, we'll go to you next. Hi, Miranda.
Hi. I actually have a comment and a question.
Okay.
The woman who had called about the Wisconsin way we use the word yet,
yeah.
I had always thought of it that we use it interchangeably for still sometimes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Instead of, you know, saying, oh, are you going yet? As you had said, the baker yet, meaning mm-hmm. still.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. That's right.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that
yeah.
makes sense.
But my question is related to the frame or the phrase dasent, which my very Germanic grandparents used to use. And I think it means is a contraction of dares not, but they would use it in place of shouldn't, as in you dasent go in that room or whatever.
Yeah.
Is that a German mm-hmm. thing, or?
Yes, exactly. My German grandmother
did
as well.
It's not specifically
Pardon?
German, though. It's not specifically German.
But it's Darent, right?
Yeah,
I'm trying to remember.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it comes from Dares Not.
That's right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
But it's used. It's not necessarily just from German.
No. It's got a long historical basis in English.
All right. There you go, Miranda. Thanks. And on to Barb in Menominee. Hi, Barb.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for having me. Mm-hmm. I just want to share with Grant and Martha, whose show I really enjoy listening to on the weekends, an experience that I had. My husband, when he was a young man, decided that if Webster could write a dictionary, that my husband could make up a language also. So he started making up words, and periodically over the years, he would come up with a new word. The children and I were never sure if it was a legitimate word or something that he had made up. So as a school administrator, sometimes he would refer to students who were making mischief as hanyaks, although those hanyaks were playing, hacky in the hallway. And we thought that was a made-up word. So one Saturday morning, I'm upstairs cleaning the bathroom, listening to Away With Words, and somebody called in asking about the word hanyak, and it clarified everything for us. My husband's language was legitimatized. It was a real word. I have no idea what it means.
Hanyak.
You said it was a real word, so I believe you. Thank you very much.
Do you remember that one, Grant?
100%. Yeah, that is a real word. It's not used as much as it used to be. It's slightly pejorative sometimes, but it originally referred to people from Hungary. It was a kind of a nickname on the lines of Polak for somebody from Poland. A lot of different spellings for this, but it later became kind of generalized to refer to anyone from any Eastern European country if you weren't really quite sure where they were from. And you will find it at least 100 years, maybe 120 years of history of use of this term. Sometimes it's Hanyaker, and that in particular is common a little west of Wisconsin, Montana, the Dakotas, and Wyoming, and so forth.
Hanyak, you still hear that in some parts of northern Wisconsin, I know, because I hear it once in a while. So it's still in use here.
Is it pejorative in the use that you hear? Is it a negative or just kind of a descriptive term?
Well, it's a mild negative. You know, if it often is somebody does something that's a little off, but you do it in a loving way. Well, that Hanyak went and did this or that. And so that's how it typically comes out. I want to go back. How do people, March 6th, you're going to be at Turner Hall in Milwaukee. And March 7th, you're going to be on the UW-Madison campus in Shannon Hall. Now, how do people find out more or maybe sign up? Do you have to sign up and so forth?
You can find
information about this on our website, which is waywordradio.org.
Waywordradio.org.
.org. And there's a tab for live events, and all the information is there.
And you do request, you want people to sign up in advance if possible.
Yeah, it's a ticketed show.
It's their ticketed shows. So if you want to come and see Grant and Martha at Turner Hall in Milwaukee on March 6th, or if you're in the Madison area and want to go to Shannon Hall on the UW-Madison campus on March 7th, where do we go? Once more, do that again for it. Tell us where to go.
Our website is waywordradio.org. That's W-A-Y-W-O-R-D radio.org.
Well, Grant and Martha, it has been a great pleasure to talk with you. Thank you so much. I know it's going to be great, and I enjoy listening to you at 9 o'clock on Sunday mornings right here in Wisconsin. Thank you both.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
Grant Barrett and Martha Barnett from Away With Words. It's a wonderful program, and I enjoy listening to it. You probably do as well. If you haven't listened, you should turn it in. Tomorrow, Mary Mellum back to talk taxes with us. In the meantime, stay with us. Lots more in store here on the Ideas Network.
I like pajamas. I wear pajamas. Give up pajamas.